G'day everyone, welcome to another Two and Under podcast, the Southern Hemisphere's biggest and best podcast, all things from Newcastle United. Today I'm joined by Jack to talk all things Burnley. Jack, how are you, my friend?
I'm very good. I'm a bit less tired than I was yesterday. We've had the midnight kickoffs, which have been all right, but I've obviously had my half marathons. I've been doing a couple of runs on a Sunday morning, which have been 4 a.m. starts for me to get to where the races have been. So obviously I haven't intended to watch the matches, but I've just woken up naturally and then haven't been able to get back to sleep. I've just watched them and then haven't been able to get back to sleep afterwards. So yeah, it's been a tiring few weekends, but it's good when you're scoring goals and winning games. So it doesn't matter.
Absolutely. And doing it for a great cause too, mate. There's a Bobby Robson Foundation for those. So we might throw something up on Twitter or in our show notes or something like that if people want to donate. You're doing 10 marathons this year, is that right?
I'm doing
half marathons.
Yeah, 10 half. Around, and it keeps changing where I was going to do them because some of them have been sold out and stuff like that. But yeah, there's 10 in total. I've done 3 now and I've got 7 to go.
So I've done
2 in 2 weekends and I've got another one in a few weeks. So yeah, it's big effort, but it is worth it. The Bobby Robson Foundation is amazing and I've got a family connection with it as well. So Any donations very gratefully received.
Absolutely. So we'll throw that up if anyone wants to donate in these. I understand it's tough times, but every penny counts, every cent counts, depending on where you are. So we'll get straight to the game, mate. Two changes from the lineup that dumped Sheffield United the week before. Fabian Schär's out with his hamstring injury, which seems to be a season-ending hamstring injury. Anything more than 2 weeks now, season ending, so it's not as diabolical as what it sounds. But I think the big one for me was Callum Wilson coming in for Elliot Anderson. And sometimes it takes, I don't know about you, it takes me probably 10 minutes to sort of get my stuff together after I wake up. So I'm at Napa. I like to nap before a 12 o'clock kickoff, so I like to get an hour or so in and then get up again. I don't have the juice like I used to and just keep pumping out till 3, 4, 5 in the morning. So I do like a little sneaky nap. So it does take me that little bit to get up and sort of understand what's going on. I'm still not sure what it was, but my heart is hoping it was a 4-4-2, Jack. Is that the way you thought, or do you think it was a 4-3-2-1?
I think it was a 4-4-2. I think it was they have played together before in a 2, Isak and Wilson. It's just such an unusual setup in the modern game that you kind of think, oh, is Isak going to be out on the left? But then you think, why would you do that with someone who's been scoring for fun every week, you know? So, yeah, no, I think it was a traditional good old-fashioned.
A good old-fashioned 4-4-2. All right. So if it was a 4-4-2, even if it was a 4-3-2-1, a 4-2-3-1, how does that marry up with Eddie Howe and he can't coach and he can't play any other formations or anything like that? Where does that all fit into it?
Well, he doesn't have a plan B, does he? And he's
no
flexible. We know that. So
yeah.
I think it was probably just luck for him. You know, he was just throwing things against the wall and hoping something.
Yeah,
he doesn't really think deeply about tactics or formations or anything. He just sort of wings it. So I just think he got luck on this occasion.
I reckon one of his kids had a day off school and he's brought him into work for a day away from the missus. And one of them's moved one of the magnets on the big whiteboard in his office. And he's just going, oh, hang on a sec, what's this? That might work, you know. And this, lo and behold, it did. But I didn't think Elliot Anderson was too bad against Sheffield United. I thought he was a constant threat all game. But I think Callum Wilson's a little bit better than poor Elliot Anderson. The thing that really got me excited was the bench, though, Jack. Seeing Nick Pope and Anderson was obviously on the bench, but Miggy, Joel Linton, Barnes as well on the bench. It's like, what the hell is this? We haven't had this for months.
I know, it's incredible, isn't it? I mean, you still had Paul Dummett and Joe White were on the bench still, but you looked at the rest of them, even like Elliot Anderson, it's exciting to see him. Harvey Barnes has been on the bench quite a bit lately. He can't get in the team ahead of, obviously on the left, ahead of Gordon. And then Murphy has been on the right and doing pretty well as well. So, like strength and depth. And, you know, it shows in the form over the last, since the international break, since the West Ham game. The form's obviously picked up. And it's another thing, isn't it? We've said that Eddie Howe will get his players on the pitch. He'll have time to coach them and you'll see a difference. And that's exactly what's happened.
Yeah, what a revelation when you've actually got a squad down to the bare bones, but they've got time to recover and do some stuff. They actually, the team that finished fourth last year is actually not a bad team. It revolutionary, I know, but who would have thought? But I reckon after the first 10 or 15 minutes probably had me questioning that, because we started appallingly again. For probably at least the third game in a row, the Palace game, we started poorly and managed to continue our form for the rest of the 90 minutes. But even the Sheffield United game, we weren't great there early, went behind as well. And then, yeah, the first 10 or 15 minutes here, there was alarm bells. But I know it's Burnley and they're obviously primed to go down. I think we all but confirmed that they were probably going to be relegated now. But what were you thinking after that first 10 or 15 minutes?
Like you said, it's happened quite a bit recently. It happened at Fulham as well, where we were very much under pressure for the start of the game. And then I think with this game, it was probably likely to happen because Burnley have been in a bit of decent form. This was a huge game for them. You know, they were at home. I think it was always likely, in any game in the Premier League, you're always going to have a period of the game where you're under a bit of pressure. So, and that happened. It's been happening at the beginning of games for us, but we've been doing well, defending well, seeing it out. For all the pressure, they had one half penalty appeal, but they didn't really have many good chances, and that's been happening in the other games as well, where we've been pressured but not conceding a lot of chances. Unlike in January and December, where teams were just running through us, you know, so we were conceding lots of goals. So it's fine to be under pressure, I think, for periods of games, as long as you control it, and then you know that they're not going to be able to sustain that for the whole game. And then we've just got so much quality in the team when we've got Isak, Gordon, Bruno, you know, when you've got them in the team, one of them has a good day and, you know, you're laughing really. So that's what happened in this game. I think we were just by far the better teams, so much more quality, and Kompany was good enough to come out and just say that, you know.
It's really not that hard to do, is it?
He didn't make any excuses, like, you know, we are better, we've got really good players. That's just what happened. And it was just so pleasing to win an away game. It's only the fifth away game this season we've won in the league, so it's been difficult on the road. But if we can start, we've got two more big away games coming up. So if we can start picking up wins just in time, that's perfect.
Yeah, I wonder sometimes if it's against kind of the lesser teams. Maybe not Crystal Palace, because they've actually been playing pretty well since old Roy left. But it's like the lesser teams just come out all guns blazing at the start and see what they can do. And like you said, if you can just sort of manage that first part of the game, as in 15, 20 minutes, without any damage on the score sheet, you probably work your way into it, and then they're out of ideas, they're out of puff and things like that. And I think that's definitely what happened the last couple of games, albeit last week they did actually put one in. But the Callum Wilson goal, it was probably really our first meaningful attack anyway, and Isak's shot gets parried and Callum Wilson's there to score, and that really kind of settled it down for us. And I thought that was just the kind of settler we needed. But unfortunately, and as is the case with Callum Wilson, when he's not playing, he needs to be sold. And then when he does play, we need to keep him. And it's so frustrating that I change on this weekly, but I don't know which way to land on it. How about you?
It is difficult because he's just shown in the last two games, he scored his goal against Sheffield United was a fantastic
finish. Was a cracker, yeah.
This goal was just, you know, classic Wilson poaching in the 6-yard box. And it's a real skill set to be able to do that. I think that this is really good timing, not just because he's scoring goals for us and getting his points, but it puts him back in the shop window. Like, I think he's 32. We all know about his injuries. He's a really good striker. And I think he's the second all-time Premier League goal scorer for us now.
He is
a fantastic striker at what he does. But let's just be fair about it. He's by far the wrong side of 30 now. He's got a bad injury record anyway. If he wants to stay around for the last season of his contract and be second or maybe even third choice, then great. He'd be a very useful squad player, but you just can't rely on him consistently over a season. So, and I think this is, like I said, this is good timing because somebody like West Ham or someone will look at him and say, you know, get maybe
I reckon we can get him right.
Towards the end of the transfer window, they'll look at him and say, right, this is someone who knows how to score goals in the Premier League. He's available for 10, 12 million. Let's just go and do it. And I think that would be good for us for the money side of things as well. But obviously we'll need a replacement of some description. So, and that won't be cheap.
I know we don't really like to dive into other teams and stuff, but if you're in Ipswich Town and is that a $12 million gamble that you'd take as a newly promoted team?
You'd think so. Like, you know, Premier League proven quality goal scorers don't come around very
often. Yeah, exactly.
So for a team like Ipswich, it'd be good. West Ham, they might have him just to stop him scoring against them every time he plays against them. That's the only reason I said that.
Yeah, $12 million for a Macarena.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's it. But yeah. you don't get strikers like this who are proven in the Premier League very often. Even for say if you went to Ipswich or Leeds, or if they got promoted and he played in 20 games and he scored maybe 8 goals, you know, which he probably would if he had 20 games, then that could be the difference for them between staying up. He would like it because he could go and be the main man as well. So I'm not trying to sell him here. But I think we do need to actually move him and maybe Miggy on for financial reasons. And he doesn't seem like the kind of person who will be happy sitting on the bench as second or third choice. So I think it might happen.
It was a bit of a reluctant sort of handing over of the penalty too, which that happened also a little bit after we opened the scoring. And there was part of him that thinks he's the top dog, but I think common sense prevailed and he came to the conclusion that's I'm not that guy anymore. That's not me. And I couldn't believe what I seen, Jack. He actually missed. And I didn't think he was ever going to miss a penalty for us, the big dog, but he did. And then I thought, oh, hang on, he might have got a reprieve, but no reprieve. Could you believe? Are you one of them ones that go in thinking your mentality for a penalty, whether it's during a game or even a penalty shootout, is he's going to miss? So that's your default kind of
thing? Yeah, I always think that we're going to miss just because that's I think, you know, if you're going to miss a penalty, then miss one when you're 3-0 up and the game's already won. Like, you know,
you
won against West Ham, which got it back to 3-2. He scored all of his other penalties. The one last season against Forest, that was the big pressure one. So I don't know what he did differently this time. He didn't seem to watch what the goalkeeper was doing. And he put it in his usual spot in the bottom left corner. But, yeah, he just didn't get it right for whatever reason. Maybe he was just trying something a bit different because we knew that we were 3-0 up. But
yeah, I've got some credits in the bank. I might just jump back again to the second goal. The Gordon assist brings him to the 10-10 club, which you correctly predicted at the start of the season. And I said this last week with Lee that penalties won should, and obviously converted, should be an assist as well, because you've actually won the penalty that's led to the goal. So for me, I'm with you. That should be an assist. So he's technically in the 10-16 club, but I think six was the second most, I think, equal second most in the Premier League. I think eight was the highest and six is the second most for a season, which is phenomenal, his ability to draw fouls inside the area.
You can see it happening sort of as it unfolds. Like, you know that he's going to kick it back past the defender because he backs himself to pay. You know that the defender's not going to be able to do anything about it.
Like, yes.
The defender just sort of grabs him and kicks him, and then you know that he's going to go down and it's going to be a penalty. So if we didn't have Isak in the team and Wilson, obviously, I think Gordon would probably be the penalty taker as well because he can take
the penalty probably.
As well. But yeah, this, of course, it should be counted as assist, you know? Like, it's a massive part of the game. I think he's won 7 in all competitions now, I think it is. When I made that prediction at the start of the season, it was ambitious, you know, optimistic. I wasn't 100% certain he was actually going to do that. It's hard to do it. It does not happen. Only the best players do that.
Yeah, I did see a list popped up on Twitter, maybe yesterday. Some of the players on that list are bloody good players. So to be mentioned in that company, Yeah, I don't think there was any potatoes in that list at all. So for him to be on there is a massive thing. And given his age, I think, like, he could be on there a few times if he keeps going the way he's going and things like that. So he's the lock for the Euros for me. I don't know about you, but there's no way that he's not on that plane, which I'm not sure if that means we miss him here in Melbourne when he comes out, but he's definitely going to the Euros. And I don't know who's missing out. I don't care who's missing out, but he's going.
They've increased the squads to 26 now as well, so that's more chance. But I think he'd have to go anyway. Like he did quite well when he got his chance for England.
He did, yeah. Yeah.
He's better than, you know, he's in better form than someone like Marcus Rashford, who might otherwise be in. You've got like Jared Bowen, obviously Cole Palmer, and yeah, there's pretty good options there, but he definitely deserves to go. And the thing about Gordon is he had a really tough start at Newcastle as well for the first six months.
Oh, awful start, yeah. But that was by his own admission. He came in not where he needed to be, through no fault of his own. It's where he's come from, and the level he was at was due to where he'd come from. But he vowed after the Chelsea game last year that he was going to come back, and he hasn't let anyone down.
And I don't know if you've probably seen the thing he did with Gary Neville.
I listened to it. I haven't watched it. I listened to it in the car.
It was absolutely incredible to hear his attitude and his mentality. Like, it's not what you would have expected from him. It was very different to, obviously, the stereotype of him when he came, you know, like just a
shithouse,
annoying shithouse scouser who doesn't have any end product. But he was talking about like visualizations and, you know, like doing yoga and stuff. And he doesn't do strength training, you know, like,
he doesn't get in the gym. No, I'm like, well, okay.
It took him 6 months to adjust to get fit enough to get used to the tactical demands of what Eddie Howe wants. And you've seen something similar happen to an extent with Lewis Hall, who now is coming in. I don't know if you want to talk about him later, but he's come in.
No, let's get into him now.
Yeah, it's been a similar thing with him, where he's been sitting on the bench for a while, and people have been saying throughout the whole season, what's going on? Why is Lewis Hall not playing? Why have we done this? And then he's proven in the last few games, you know, I think he had to develop that level of understanding of what Eddie Howe wanted him to do. He had to get better defensively. There was some question marks over his attitude, people probably saying he was the last into training and all that sort of stuff. So he's had 9 months, you know, he's only 19 still. I remember,
was it the Brentford game as well, where he came on as a sub and then got subbed off at the end, and he kind of kicked off a bit like last season as well. And he's just a different player. Also, I was talking about Gordon again, but I just thought of that. But yeah, Lewis Hall, the same.
Well, Lewis Hall had a few games where he got subbed off, you know, at halftime when he first started. And like, there's nothing wrong with an 18-year-old taking time to find his feet in a new club with a new set of tactical demands. You know, like, there's nothing wrong with that. And the narrative all season has been about, and maybe we could have, you know, spent that money better elsewhere, but we didn't actually spend any money, remember, apart from a loan fee, presumably.
Yeah,
that's going to come next summer. So, and now he's looking like a real prospect, and he's 19. And fair enough, it's only against Burnley, but he played a big part in the first goal with an interception and a switch.
And pass, a run,
And so I think it's just going to, it bodes well for the future. And it just shows you these young players, they need a little bit of time, but let's just trust that the manager and the coach and stuff know what they're doing with the development of these players.
Yeah, and I think, and this is probably not Lewis Hall's fault, but because him and Livramento are coming at the same time, they kind of get lumped together and they get judged together. And Livramento's had a fantastic season for his first season with us, and some of his games have been amazing. But he's 3 years older than Lewis Hall. Like, just because they come together and they're young fullbacks, like, I think people kind of forget that Livramento is a little bit older with a little bit more Premier League experience as well. And it shows. Like I've got no doubt when Lewis Hall's 21, he'd probably be better than what Livramento is at 21. I think people kind of forget that in the wash and everything like that. And they don't think, they just, oh, well, look at Livramento. He's had a great season. Lewis Hall can't even get on and things like that. Yeah, there's reasons why. You know, trust the people that see these guys probably six times a week rather than you that see them for sometimes 2 hours. So,
yeah. But it was just around the time with the Dan Burn stuff where, and it did seem a bit strange that Hall was sitting on the bench, but I think you don't know how he would have gone if he had played, but I think the strategy with him has been proven to be, you know, to be correct, because now we've got him in the team and he's playing well. So he looks happy, and him and Tino were actually, it was interesting what they did tactically in this game, because they were often the pushing furthest forward. You know, the fullbacks were really far forward, and I remember there was one chance where it was Tino, and I think he had his shot, and it nearly came to Hall, but it was like, what's he doing there? Like, the fullbacks
are, yeah. We normally say Trippier up there and Burns back. Yeah, it doesn't normally work with two people.
It's been nice to have Burns back in the centre as well, where he's been playing very, very well.
He's been great. I think the captaincy's kind of elevated him a little bit more than normal. I think he really feels the armband, and not that it doesn't mean much to Jamal Lascelles or Callum Wilson when he's done it, or Kieran Trippier, but I just think it means a little bit more to Dan Burn than what it does to the other guys, having grown up and supported the club and stuff like that. And I think he's taken his game to another level, albeit in a different position, but I still think he's been really good since he's taken over the armband, which has kind of coincided with his move into the middle. The second half, Jack, it could have been anything. I think it could have been a cricket score. Sheffield United away areas there for a little bit. We dominated that much, but couldn't really stain the score sheets as much as we would have liked with only the one goal. But I just want to touch on Jacob Murphy as well. I thought he played a tremendous game as a winger, and whether his future's with us next season as well, I'm not sure. I still think he's a valuable person, and I think you really need a Jacob Murphy in your squad, a guy who's just happy to be there, will give his all when called upon. He's a reliable option if you need to bring someone on or give someone a spell and things like that. I thought he had another great game.
Yeah, and he's got 3 assists in 2 games now. So, you know, you can't knock that sort of output from someone who, he's a good player at what he does, but he's never going to be a world beater. But it's a bit like what you're saying with Dan Burn. It means a lot to Jacob Murphy. Like, he knows that he's not going to, you know, this is his club, and he's just living the dream and just loving being there at the moment as well. So he put on 2 really good assists. You know, he's just doing what he's being asked to do, and it just shows you know, like, Eddie trusts him. He's playing him over Harvey Barnes at the moment. He's probably playing him over Miggy until the end of the season, now that Miggy's back as well, because he trusts him. He does what he asks him to do, and he can defend as well.
That's all you need. Forward. Yeah. And pace. I spoke about this last week. I love Harvey Barnes. I think he's a great player. I love him coming off the bench. I think he's such a weapon at the end of a game where bodies are tiring and things like that. And his directness to goal is a real asset when he probably doesn't want. I don't think any player wants to be known as the old, I guess, like Gunnar Solskjaer in a way, the impact sub or the super sub and stuff like that. But I think he could be such a weapon, maybe in the next 3 games, but next year as well, coming off the bench and having a real impact coming at teams who are tired. So, yeah, we'll see what happens with that. But, I mean, we were cruising that much, Jack, in the second half, and I thought this might have happened around the January, February time when the injuries were kind of in the 13 to 14 range, but we actually brought a bus driver on to finish the game, which was fantastic to see. I thought he might have got a run out when we were really crippled, but when I seen the bench and with Joelinton and Elmer on and all that coming back, I didn't think we needed the bus driver anymore, but he managed to come on for 10 minutes and sort of help see the game out. So that was good to see as well.
Maybe we should have brought the actual bus driver on, because he wouldn't have
conceded. Yeah.
Like, it's funny seeing Richie. This is his role now, isn't it? He comes on towards the end, and he's in his last few games for the club.
Eddie's just giving him his appearance fees, looking after him. He's done good by him his whole career, and I'll get you a couple of appearance fees at the end.
I wouldn't be surprised if he did actually become the club bus driver, though, after this. I think that would be a good
idea. Oh, mate.
He likes being around the club.
He would love it. Absolutely. He'd be chauffeuring blokes from training, like take him back home, pick him up from home and drive him in again. You might have like a little 10 or 15 minivan just to pick up a few guys, do a drop and then go back to the next estate and pick up the next guys and stuff. I could definitely see Matt Ritchie doing that next year. But so the table, we were six at the moment. I think the lowest we can fall is seventh. Man United play tonight, or in the tomorrow morning, our time, I think at 5 a.m. But something I definitely won't be getting up for. Against Crystal Palace, who we only seen a couple of weeks ago, who are putting a serious run of form together with their new manager and Mateta and Eze and all that. They're having a ball out there. So I think that's going to be a hard game for them. But we're 2 points ahead of them at the moment. The thing I'm worried about is Chelsea. They're coming home like an absolute train. So they're 2 points behind us now as well. So that European spots are really starting to tighten up.
Yeah, Chelsea really picked up form at the wrong time for us. But they've got away games against Forest and Brighton to come, and then they play Bournemouth at home. I think it's a big ask for them to win all three of those games. So, and if we get 7 points from our three, then that's it anyway. It would be nice if Chelsea drop points. It's a bit like last season when Liverpool were chasing us down in Villa. Villa went to Anfield and got a draw. I was hoping for something similar from West Ham today, but
so they got obliterated.
Yeah. So Chelsea are a bit of a concern, but it's at that stressful time of the season where you're sort of watching for other clubs' results. But I was just reflecting on this before as well, how nice it is to be, you know, finishing the season battling Manchester United and Chelsea for a European position. It's still
it feels a bit
strange and not real to be in this situation. But I think objectively, if you looked at it objectively, I think we're probably favourites, you know, because we play our next game before they play as well. So we could really put the pressure on if we can beat Brighton.
Yeah. And then Man United. So that's Brighton at home.
Man United haven't got any defenders. So when we go there and the shit anyway, so I think we'll be a good chance in that game. So let's just see what happens. But I am looking forward to the season finishing because, it's successful now.
It's been the longest.
More than it should be.
Yeah. This season's been the longest 4 years I can ever remember. So I think the Man United game's going to be the one. I think whatever happens is probably going to be determined by whatever happens there. If we draw or whatever happens, we just can't lose. So, stay tuned. We'll hopefully got a new United series coming later in the week too, Jack. A very special guest. So keep your eyes and your ears out for that. Not sure if we'll do a preview for Brighton this weekend, so just keep a look at it if we do, but we'll definitely be back with a Brighton review after that game. Hopefully our last home game as well. War Flags have got a huge display teed up. And then 2 weeks, just a little over 2 weeks until we get to see him, Jack. I can't wait. Get to see you again too in person, which is always a good thing. So thanks everyone for watching. Thanks everyone for listening. Jack, thank you for jumping on tonight, mate. And stay tuned. We'll see you all next time.
Cheers, Keeks.